Hello, and welcome to Learning English Weekend, the Sunday edition. I'm Mario Ritter. We're happy you joined us on this Sunday, February 28th. During the week, we hope you listen to As It Is, VOA's magazine show for English learners. Our weekend programs have the same kinds of stories you find on As It Is, only longer. Today, our first story is about social entrepreneurs. These men and women use their businesses to help solve social problems related to education, the environment, and other issues. They usually reinvest most profits back into the business instead of paying dividends to investors. Not all social entrepreneurship succeeds or is good for investors, but the field continues to expand. We also hear about the recent election at the world's leading soccer organization, FIFA. Then, you will hear our long-running program, Words and Their Stories. Ana Mateo tells us about English language expressions related to breathing. In the second half of our show, we look at history with a fresh eye. Our Making of a Nation program will tell you how Woodrow Wilson, a college professor and governor, became president of the United States. But first, Mary Gottschall tells us about the idea of doing good things through business.
Social entrepreneurs, people who create startup companies that would help the environment, healthcare, or agriculture, are on the rise. These entrepreneurs use innovation to tackle important economic and social problems. They can be for-profit or non-profit entities. Funding for social entrepreneurs is increasing. This is coming from foundations, institutional investors, and individuals. Kiplinger is a personal finance publication in Washington, D.C. It reported that the amount of assets in socially responsible investing, focused on companies doing good in the world, almost doubled from $3.74 trillion in 2012 to $6.57 trillion in 2014. Globally, interest in socially responsible investing is growing even faster. The 2014 Global Sustainable Investment Review said that between 2012 and 2014, global assets rose to $21.4 trillion from $13.3 trillion, an increase of 61%. The Schwab Foundation for Social Entrepreneurship in Geneva, Switzerland, is an example of a foundation that advances social entrepreneurs around the world. Each year, working with the World Economic Forum, the foundation searches the globe for outstanding social innovators with business models that are proven to drive social and environmental change, said their website. Getting rich is not the primary aim of social entrepreneurs. Instead, their focus is on fulfilling their mission to improve society. While profits are ideally generated, the main aim is not to maximize financial returns for shareholders, but to grow the social venture and reach more people in need, said the Schwab Foundation website. Usually, social entrepreneurs reinvest their profits in the enterprise to expand it. Kristen Gruss Richmond is co-founder of Revolution Foods and one of the social entrepreneurs selected by the Schwab Foundation. Her company in Oakland, California, is dedicated to providing fresh food prepared daily for families and schools and is active in 11 states across the U.S. and Washington, D.C. Richmond said social entrepreneurs are driven by their values. She gave the following advice to aspiring social entrepreneurs. Align yourself with a team, a board, and investors who believe in your mission. Many social entrepreneurs create novel solutions to solve world problems. Bart Wiegens, a Belgian social entrepreneur, is an example. He kept rats as childhood pets, then realized they could be put to work detecting landmines. He founded the nonprofit organization Apopo in 1997. Apopo has used specially trained rats on leashes to clear more than 13,200 unexploded bombs from minefields in Tanzania, Mozambique, Angola, and Cambodia, according to the National Geographic. Apopo uses African giant pouched rats, which are huge, cat-sized rats native to Central Africa. They have an extraordinary sense of smell, said the National Geographic. The rats are lightweight enough to walk across the mines without setting them off. And their sensitive noses can sniff out explosives buried in the ground even decades after a war has ended. In addition, many business schools, both in the U.S. and other countries, now offer courses in social entrepreneurship. The Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania is an example. It is ranked by U.S. News & World Report as one of the nation's top business schools. Wharton Online offers a 5-week class on social entrepreneurship, 4 to 6 hours a week through Coursera, a global e-learning platform. Graduates of the course receive a certificate and learn how to develop, test, and deploy high-impact solutions to society's toughest problems, according to Coursera's website. Social entrepreneurs have also won increased media attention. For example, Forbes showcased 30 Under 30, the top social entrepreneurs younger than 30 from around the world. One honoree, Sejal Hati, age 25, was a molecular biology student at Yale who sought to help girls globally. She founded Girl Tank, a for-profit startup, to identify and develop girls with potential to be high-impact leaders. The website refers to it as the She Lab for social entrepreneurship. Girl Tank creates a virtual tank for young women interested in social entrepreneurship to utilize the collective genius of the group to brainstorm ideas and solutions, crowdsourcing funding for their ventures, and receive peer-to-peer mentoring. I'm Mary Gottschall.
Next, Dan Friedel tells us about the recent election at FIFA.
Gianni Infantino of Switzerland is the new FIFA president. Infantino won after the organization voted a second time on Friday in Zurich. Infantino takes over world soccer's governing body 2 years before the next World Cup. FIFA is stuck in a bribery and corruption scandal from last year. Authorities in both Switzerland and the United States are investigating FIFA's finances. They are looking at how money is spent and how World Cup tournaments are awarded. Infantino finished ahead of 3 other candidates. He defeated Sheikh Salman of Bahrain 115-88 in the second vote. Infantino will replace Sepp Blatter, another Swiss, who was banned by FIFA's ethics committee late in 2015. He made unauthorized payments to a colleague. Blatter led the organization since 1998 and served 5 terms. Infantino is the general secretary of UEFA, the organization that runs soccer in Europe. He is 45. FIFA did more on Friday than just vote for a new president. It made some anti-corruption reforms. A president can no longer serve more than 3 4-year terms. There will be independent spending reviews. And the executive committee will now be called the FIFA Council and reserve more positions for women. The next World Cup will be held 2 years from now in Russia. I'm Dan Friedel.
Next, Anna Mateo brings us words and their stories. Listen carefully to the discussion between her and our own Katie Weaver. You will hear a lot of English expressions about breath and breathing. If you listen carefully, you'll hear a lot more. Here is Anna.
Hello, and welcome to VOA Learning English's Words and Their Stories. Every week, we bring you some common words, expressions, and idioms used in the United States. Today, we are going to breathe. Breathe in. Breathe out. Breathing keeps us alive. Deep breathing can lower our blood pressure and calm an overactive mind. Today, we visit the seaside as we explore many expressions that have to do with breathing. Two friends are taking a much-needed break from work. We join them as they sit on the beach, burying their feet deep in the sand. This morning, they are taking scuba lessons. They breathe in the cleansing ocean air, and they breathe out the frustrations of the work they left behind. Let's listen.
This is the life. I am so glad we took this vacation.
Me too. Sitting here listening to the ocean and the seagulls, I can finally breathe easy.
No work for the next 14 days. That's breathing easy.
Work was killing me. Right up until I left for the airport, my boss was there breathing down my neck the whole time. Yes, boss, I finished the report. Yes, I contacted the client. Yes, I submitted the proposal. Ugh. Advertising is such a non-stop industry.
Bosses need to know that it doesn't help to breathe down someone's neck. People need a little breathing room to get things done.
That is the truth. Well, I am breathing a sigh of relief to finally be away from work. Hey, how are things with your job?
It's better. Several months ago, I was so busy working on a political campaign that I hardly had time to breathe.
I know. I didn't see you for months during that campaign. I wondered when you were going to come up for air.
And working with politicians, that can be challenging. They start to breathe their own fumes.
In what ways are they breathing their own fumes?
They believe what the public and media say about them. They won't listen to anybody, and they think they know best.
I don't have to deal with that type at my office, but one colleague of mine is really getting on my nerves. She sucks all the air out of the room. She's loud, talks all the time, and always has to be the center of attention.
I also worked with a guy who sucked the air out of a room, too, but he left. The person who replaced him is pleasant and has many new ideas. A real breath of fresh air.
That's great. You know, talking about fresh air, how about this ocean air? So much better than a polluted city. I could stay here forever.
Wouldn't it be nice if we could win the lottery? That way, we could just stay here on the beach and not worry about making money.
I wouldn't hold your breath for that to happen. The odds of winning the lottery are not in your favor. But it sounds like you need to breathe a little life into your career. Maybe it's time to look for another job.
Well, in fact, I have a lead on a great job. But I won't know until next month, so don't breathe a word to anyone about it.
I promise, my lips are sealed. But really, would you listen to us? We want to get away from work, and here we are talking about it.
You're right. It's time to put work talk aside. Here comes our scuba instructor. Speaking of breathing and coming up for air, let's not forget to do that during our scuba lesson, literally.
And that's it for Words and Their Stories. Let us know what you think of the program or practice using the expressions on our website at learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Ana Mateo.
President Harry Truman once said, "The only thing new in the world is the history you don't know." With that in mind, we turn to our history series, The Making of a Nation. Today, Shirley Griffith, Kay Gallant, and Harry Monroe tell us about the presidency of Woodrow Wilson.
A new leader stood before the American people on March 4, 1913. He was Woodrow Wilson, the 28th President of the United States. Wilson belonged to the Democratic Party. He was progressive in his belief that government should take an active part in efforts for social reforms. This week in our series, Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe begin the story of Wilson's presidency.
Woodrow Wilson had spent most of his life at Princeton University. First, he was a professor. Then, he was university president. Next, Wilson was elected governor of the state of New Jersey. His early success as governor made him a leading candidate for the Democratic presidential nomination in 1912. Wilson traveled widely around the country during the campaign. He made speeches to many groups. He tried to make himself and his ideas known to as many Americans as possible.
Wilson called his program the New Freedom. One of his campaign promises was to fight for better conditions for America's small business owners. Such proposals helped him win the Democratic nomination for president. Then he defeated President William Howard Taft and former President Theodore Roosevelt in the election. Woodrow Wilson, the former president of a university, had become the president of a nation. The largest crowd in Washington, D.C.'s history welcomed Wilson outside the Capitol building on the day of his inauguration. He called on the American people to join him in making the country a better place. "Our duty," Wilson said, "is to correct the evil without hurting the good. I call all honest men, all patriotic, all forward-looking men to my side."
Wilson wasted no time. He immediately called a special session of Congress to act on Democratic campaign promises to reduce import taxes or tariffs. Wilson felt strongly about the need to reform these taxes. He broke tradition by leaving the White House to appear before Congress in person to appeal for his tariff proposals. Many members of Congress opposed Wilson's plans. But the new president used the results of a Senate investigation to win the fight. The investigation showed that a number of senators owned companies that depended on high tariffs for their profits. The votes of these senators were influenced by their property holdings. Public knowledge of the situation forced many of them to give up their holdings and stop resisting tariff reform. Congress finally approved Wilson's proposals.
Lower tariffs reduced the amount of money taken in by the federal government. So the Senate also approved a tax on income or earnings. A constitutional amendment had been passed earlier to permit such a tax. President Wilson and the Democratic Party were pleased with the new tariff and income tax bills. But they were far from finished. Next, they turned their efforts to reform of the banking industry. For several years, many people had recognized the need for changes in the banking system. The old system of uncontrolled private banks had developed years earlier, before the United States became a major industrial nation. Many people agreed that a more modern system was needed, but they could not agree on details.
President Wilson said control of the nation's wealth was held by too few men. He noted a report that said just two men controlled 10% of the total wealth of the United States. Wilson said the nation needed a money supply that could be increased or reduced when necessary to correct economic conditions. He said a method was needed to let banks help each other during economic emergencies. And, he said, laws were needed to prevent a few wealthy men from using the economic resources of the country for their own purposes. Finally, Wilson said the control of this system of banking must be public, not private. It must belong to the government itself.
Wilson called his proposal for a central bank the Federal Reserve System. Under the plan, the nation would be divided into 12 areas. Each area would have its own Federal Reserve Bank. These area banks would not do business with the public. They would serve only as bankers' banks. And they would issue a new form of money supported by the federal government. Most important, the leaders of the new system would be chosen by the government, not by private business.
Bankers, business leaders, and their representatives in Congress sharply criticized President Wilson's proposals. They said government control of the banking system was socialism, not capitalism. But Wilson refused to change his proposals, and he helped to lead the fight to make them law. Finally, Congress agreed. It did not take long for bankers to discover that the new system was much better than the old one. Today, the Federal Reserve System is one of the most important institutions in the United States.
For Woodrow Wilson, the fight over the banking system was yet another political success. He had won major reforms in the nation's tariffs, taxes, and banking systems. Now, he told Congress, that new legislation was needed to control the power of monopolies and trusts. These were the giant companies and business alliances that controlled complete industries. Wilson proposed a new antitrust law to control the actions of large companies. His supporters in Congress wrote a bill that listed a number of business activities that no longer would be permitted. For example, no longer could a company set prices that would reduce competition or create a monopoly. No longer could corporations buy stocks of competing companies. No longer could they demand that a store refuse to sell competing products. The new bill also protected labor unions from being charged with antitrust violations. It gave unions more power to organize and protect workers.
At President Wilson's request, Congress also prepared a law that set up a government agency called the Federal Trade Commission. The commission was given the job of investigating wrongdoing in business. It had the power to force companies to obey the new antitrust laws and other rules. Both the antitrust law and the Federal Trade Commission helped protect small business owners from the power of business giants. Once again, the proposals caused fierce debate. But once again, Congress finally voted to give Wilson most of what he wanted.
The early months of Wilson's term were one of the most successful times in the history of any president. The new president had won the election by promising major reforms in the economic life of the country. And he had kept that promise. The reforms were not only a victory for Woodrow Wilson, they also changed the face of American business and economics for many years to come. The income tax, for example, grew to become the federal government's main source of money.
Woodrow Wilson had taught history in the days when he was a professor at Princeton University. He knew his actions as president could influence the country for a long time. But as a historian, he also knew his own term in the White House could be changed by unexpected events. That is just what happened. Wilson campaigned for president mainly on national issues, but he soon was forced to spend more and more time on international issues. His first big problem was across the United States southern border in Mexico.
And that is Learning English Weekend, the Sunday edition. Join us again tomorrow for As It Is. And keep learning English through stories from the Voice of America.